During our gathering hymn each week, we take an opportunity to ritualize the moments of joy or concern in our lives by placing a stone in a bowl of water. The stones represent this, the concerns that you have. The water represents this community. Pick up a stone, place it in the water, and let this community hold those important thoughts and prayers that you have for you. You are invited to come forward during the gathering hymn, choose a stone and place it in the bowl of water. They are located on either aisle. Would you rise in body or spirit for our opening hymn, number 318, We Would Be One. Thank you, Randy. We are grateful for these gifts which you have given and we receive to do the work of this congregation in the wider world. The morning offering has been received. This reading is the Gospel According to Shug by Alice Walker, and I make an editorial note. I'm pretty sure that Alice Walker wouldn't have minded my adding a stanza to Shug's gospel that reflects the inclusion of gender identity as separate from sex and gender. Helped are those who are enemies of their own racism. They shall live in harmony with the citizens of this world and not with those of their ancestors which have passed away and which they shall never see again. Helped are those born from love, conceived in their father's tenderness and their mother's orgasm, for they shall be those, numbers of whom will be called illegitimate, whose spirits shall know no boundaries, even between heaven and earth, and whose eyes shall reveal the spark of the love that was their own creation. They shall know joy equal to their suffering, and they will lead multitudes into dancing and peace. Helped are those too busy living to respond when they are wrongfully attacked. On their walks, they shall find mysteries so intriguing as to distract them from every blow. Helped are those who find something in creation to admire each and every hour. Their days will overflow with beauty, and the darkest dungeon will offer gifts. Helped are those who receive only to give. Always in their house will be the circular energy of generosity, and in their hearts a beginning of a new age on earth, when no keys will be needed to unlock the heart, and no locks will be needed on the doors. Helped are those who love the stranger. In this they reflect the heart of the Creator and that of the Mother. Helped are those who are content to be themselves. They will never lack mystery in their lives, and the joys of self-discovery will be constant. Helped are those who love the entire cosmos rather than their own tiny country, city, or farm. For to them will be shown the unbroken web of life and the meaning of infinity. Helped are those who live in quietness, knowing neither brand name nor fad. They shall live every day as if in eternity, and each moment shall be full as it is long. Helped are those who love others unsplit off from their faults. To them will be given clarity of vision. Helped are those who create anything at all, for they shall relive the thrill of their own conception and realize a partnership in the creation of the universe that keeps them responsible and cheerful. Helped are those who love the earth, their mother, and who willingly suffer that she may not die. In their grief over her pain, they will weep rivers of blood and in their joy, in her lively response to love, they will converse with trees. Helped are those whose every act is a prayer for harmony in the universe, for they are the restorers of balance to our planet. To them will be given the insight that every good act done anywhere in the cosmos welcomes the life of an animal or a child. Helped are those who risk themselves for others' sakes. To them will be given increasing opportunities for ever greater risks. Theirs will be a vision of the world in which no one's gift is despised or lost. Helped are those who strive to give up their anger. Their reward will be that in any confrontation, their first thoughts will never be of violence or war. Helped are those whose every act is a prayer for peace. On them depends the future of the world. Helped are those who forgive. Their reward shall be forgetfulness of every evil done to them. It will be in their power, therefore, to envision the new earth. Helped are those who are shown the existence of the Creator's magic in the universe. They shall experience delight and astonishment without ceasing. Helped are those who laugh with a pure heart. Theirs will be the company of the jolly righteous. Helped are those who love all the colors of all the human beings as they love all the colors of animals and plants. None of their children, nor any of their ancestors, nor any parts of themselves shall be hidden from them. Helped are those who love the lesbian, the gay, the bisexual, and the straight as they love the sun, the moon, and the stars. None of their children, nor any of their ancestors, nor any parts of themselves shall be hidden from them. Helped are those who love the transgender, the gender nonconforming, the gender non-binary, the gender queer, and the cisgender, as they love the fire, the rain, the wind, and the soil. Their earth and sky energies will infuse the planet with gentle strength. Helped are those who love the broken and the whole. None of their children, nor any of their ancestors, nor any of themselves shall be despised. Helped are those who love the broken, helped are those who do not join mobs. Theirs shall be the understanding that to attack in anger is to murder in confusion. Helped are those who find the courage to do at least one small thing each day to help the existence of another, plant, animal, river, or other human being. They shall be joined by a multitude of the timid. Helped are those who lose their fear of death. Theirs is the power to envision the future in a blade of grass. Helped are those who love and actively support the diversity of life. They shall be secure in their differentness. And thus ends the reading. Leave it to musicians and poets to really tell it like it should be. We Americans need help. Last year, when I heard the news of yet another mass shooting, in this case, the one at the Capital Gazette newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland, which was the 154th shooting in the first 6 months of 2018. It's no wonder I had the macabre thought of another day, another shooting. Then on the news the next Sunday morning was a report about a mass stabbing in Boise, Idaho. NBC Nightly News reported, "It's becoming a nauseatingly common occurrence in America." Nothing has changed. And we all know that not all shootings are being reported to the public, nor are any of us able to keep taking in this news without being traumatized, whether we are aware of this or not, by what is happening to our fellow citizens. I think we are a country suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder. and individuals are acting out from traumatized psyches. And to be quite honest, I don't think there's anything new about that. Not much has changed in the past year, or in the last dozen years, or more. We Americans need help. 13 years ago this month, when I was serving as a worship associate at the First Universalist Church in Auburn, Maine, Russian President Vladimir Putin came to visit the Bush compound in Kennebunkport. Before he arrived, Putin ramped up his rhetoric regarding how the United States carries itself in global socio-political dynamics. Isn't that the case of three fingers pointing back at oneself? What concerned me most then was not how Putin chose to describe the United States, but that the chest puffing, strutting, and other posturing was heating up to a level whereby threats and war drum beats might soon be heard as well. Protesters outside the Bush compound were called unpatriotic because they criticized the Bush administration. A member of the Auburn congregation shared one of his favorite quotes with me on July 4th of that year. It went something like, "National pride is a good thing, but it should not have any boundaries." We are quick to point out the freedoms that our forefathers crafted in the Declaration of Independence when the objective is to show the lack of such freedoms in other countries. However, many of our compatriots squirm with discomfort when they do not agree with those who exercise these freedoms here in our own nation. I see this as our national double standard. Last July, there was a meeting of Putin and Trump, and the media was filled with fears about what would come out of that meeting. Well, maybe nothing specific, but it's ongoing. Today looks a lot like 13 years ago in other ways to me. Take, for example, the experience of Somali immigrants and asylum seekers who had settled in Maine's third largest city across the river from Auburn, where I lived. As June 2007 drew to a close, the tenants next door as well as above me were moving out. I was dumbfounded when my next door neighbor hollered at the young white men who were helping to carry furniture and other belongings down from the second floor apartment, "Hey, you Somalians!" His replacement for the N-word was an incorrect spelling or pronunciation of the country of origin of Maine's latest immigrant population. These Somalians have annually held a Somalian American Independence Day celebration at the end of June, an inspired way for these two disparate groups of people to come together and celebrate their national pride. However, a city leader pointed out that many of those at the June 2007 event noted that the freedoms here in America and access to basic necessities of life might not be possible if they were in the refugee camps in their native country, even though its independence was being celebrated. It's not really any different here in the United States, supposed land of the free and home of the brave. Access to basic necessities are not allowed to undocumented immigrants, adult and children detainees alike, in camps on our southern border and elsewhere, let alone the self-evident American freedoms of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Not much has changed, has it? I don't know what you did to mark the 4th of July holiday on Thursday. Lisa and I went to Mount Vernon. There we were able to celebrate the naturalization of new citizens who emigrated from 28 different countries. It's a moving experience. Remarks by author Rick Atkinson and an address by General Washington were pointed about the meaning of citizenship without being political. For me, it made the July 4th hoopla, if not the heat and humidity, tolerable. To be honest, I have very mixed feelings about the 4th of July holiday. I have long been disillusioned with our celebration of independence. It seems as problematic to me as Columbus Day in October or Thanksgiving in November. These holidays make heroic and legendary historical events that involve the colonization of this continent. That history has not been told honestly to succeeding generations. What we know about how European Americans came to conquer this continent is rife with myth. For example, we are taught that Christopher Columbus discovered America in 1492. Not only was Columbus not the first European to set foot on the continent we call North America, some give credit to the Viking Leif Erikson a half millennium before, Columbus first landed in the Bahamas and colonized the Caribbean as well as Venezuela. And as we know, all of these islands and lands were already inhabited. One of two books that I picked up from a little lending library and that I enjoyed reading was 1491, New Revelations of the Americas Before Columbus by Charles Mann. It's a book that expanded my understanding of the ways that native cultures shaped the lands around them, including the breeding process that created corn, deliberate planting of trees or forests, and developing irrigation systems and communal water delivery. Mann has a follow-up book called 1493, Uncovering the New World Columbus Created. In it, according to the New York Times Sunday Book Review, Mann argues that the lesson of history is that from the outset, globalization brought both enormous economic gains and ecological and social tumult that threatened to offset those gains. A second book that's still in my reading queue is 1421, The Year China Discovered America by Gavin Menzies. The information presented in this history of Chinese exploration flips the notion of the age of exploration on its head. You may choose to believe Menzies or Mann, I don't care. But according to Menzies, the Chinese were literally sailing all over the global map well before the likes of Columbus. Their influence on subsequent exploration and history was all but erased from the record. European and Euro-American history has invariably left out the parts that might show their own cultures in less than a perfect light. It's not that Europeans and European-Americans are different from previous cultures and telling a story that makes them look good. It's that we live in a culture that has long been dominated by white Northern European view of itself and too often fail to realize that history doesn't only center around the collective European ego. Steve Newcomb explains the origins of the doctrine of discovery and how it continues to impact us in the 21st century and especially impact Native Americans. In an article called 500 Years of Injustice, The Legacy of 15th Century Religious Prejudice, he wrote, "Thus, when Columbus sailed west across the Sea of Darkness in 1492, with the express understanding that he was authorized to take possession of any lands he discovered that were not under the dominion of any Christian rulers, he and the Spanish sovereigns of Aragon and Castile were following an already well-established tradition of discovery and conquest. Indeed, after Columbus returned to Europe, Pope Alexander VI issued a papal document, the Bull Inter Cetera of May 3, 1493, granting to Spain, at the request of Ferdinand and Isabella, the right to conquer the lands which Columbus had already found, as well as any lands which Spain might discover in the future." What became known in the 19th century as the doctrine of discovery began then in 1452 with a papal bull, Romanus Pontifex, declaring war against all non-Christians throughout the world and specifically sanctioning and promoting the conquest, colonization, and exploration of non-Christian nations and their territories. This doctrine of international law has been used ever since to subjugate native populations in North America and around the globe. A second doctrine, that of manifest destiny, the 19th century belief that the expansion of the United States throughout the American continent was both justified and inevitable, was an outgrowth and extension of the doctrine of discovery. Between these two conquering and colonizing attitudes, Americans have long thought of themselves as exceptional in the world of global politics and culture. And this stance has infected every aspect of American life. I would suggest that our cultural worship of individuals and individualism is intertwined with these two doctrines, so much so that individuals believe they may act violently towards others for all manner of personal reasons. Violent acts of any kind take us out of being in right relationship with the people with whom we live in community, whether near or far, not to mention our own selves. As Unitarian Universalists, we profess the importance of all people. The violence done by physical acts or by legal means now or in the past goes against everything that we hold true and sacred. I do not believe that our nation respects the inherent worth and dignity of everyone, whether one is an individual or another nation. Independence seems now to mean individuality at all costs and a holier-than-thou attitude towards others. That emphasis on the individual may have been enhanced by a typographical error introduced into the Declaration of Independence, as political analyst Danielle Allen has argued. A period was introduced into the first printing of the document after the phrase "life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness," period, which detaches these self-evident truths from the collective use of protest to correct government when it strays from the good of the whole. It's a long paragraph and a long sentence, but you gotta read the whole thing. You can't stop in the middle. What we need to celebrate is our dependency on each other, our interdependency. The Reverend Barbara Wells has described the first and seventh UU principles as the pillars of our faith, with the other five forming an arch spanning overhead between the two and creating the entrance to this spiritual path we choose to journey on. Barbara Wells says that these two principles are really about a radical love that knows no boundary. Among Unitarian Universalists, there are folks who would like us to put the first principle last and the seventh principle first. Our seven principles would then begin with, "We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part." Another way to visualize these two principles might be as your two arms encircling another being or object or the whole earth, with the other principles spanning from one shoulder to the other, and your head representing the fourth principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Thus, we covenant, along with the first six principles, to living out our faith through the application of the seventh, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. It really is a radical love that knows no boundaries. Just as the reading in the back of our hymnal by Mariah Mitchell tells us, the vibrations set in motion by the words that we utter reach through all space, and the tremor is felt through all time. So I'm planting this seed of consciousness in you today. I promise to respect our nation's 4th of July celebration each year, provided that the other 364 days of the year are declared dependence days, when we celebrate the interdependence of everything. There's a children's book, I don't know how many of you know it, called The Everything Seed, A Story of Beginnings by Carol Martinaco and illustrated by Joy Troyer. I love it. The text says, "We were there with all the stars and planets, all the rocks and oceans, plants and animals and people, everything that is now, ever was, or ever will be was inside that tiny first seed. The picture on that page shows a spiral with a blazing fireball at its heart. The spiral goes beyond the edges of the page, indicating that what is shown is not the whole of the picture, because the connections stretch both forward and backward in time and in all directions in space. May we be mindful of how all of the strands of the web of life are communicating with every other strand in the web. Our words and our deeds have repercussions we know not of. Let the beat heard by others be the beating of our hearts as we work toward a planet transformed by our care. The holy is found in our interdependent relationships with each other and all that is on the earth and in the vast space of the universe. Let us act as an encircling embrace of radical love that knows no bounds. And may you be among those who are helped by that which is greater than our individual self. I mentioned that poets and musicians seem to strike at the heart of all issues. And so I would share with you today a poem by Richard Blanco. Richard Blanco was the presidential inaugural poet for Barack Obama, and he was the Ware lecturer at our UUA General Assembly just over 2 weeks ago. He recently published a collection, How to Love a Country, which continues his invitation to connect to the heart of human experience and our shared identity as a country. The poems honor the individual stories that are knitted together into our true collective identity as these United States. Richard Blanco's Declaration of Interdependence. Such has been the patient sufferance. We are a mother's bread, instant potatoes, milk at a checkout line. We're her three children pleading for bubble gum and their father. We're the 3 minutes she steals to page through a tabloid, needing to believe even stars' lives are as joyful and bruised. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. We're her second job, serving an executive absorbed in his Wall Street Journal at a sidewalk cafe shadowed by skyscrapers. We're the shadows of the fortune he won and the family he lost. We're his loss and the loss. We're a father in a coal town who can't mine a life anymore because too much and too little has happened for too long. A history of repeated injuries and usurpations. We're the grit of his main street's blacked out windows and graffitied truths. We're a street in another town lined with royal palms, at home with a Peace Corps couple who collect African art. We're their dinner party talk of wines, wielded picket signs, and burned draft cards. We're what they know. It's time to do more than read the New York Times, buy fair trade coffee and organic corn. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress. We're the farmer who grew the corn, who plows into his couch as worn and as his back at the end of the day. We're his TV set, blaring news, having everything and nothing to do with the field dust in his eyes or his son nested in the ache of his arms. We're his son. We're a black teenager who drove too fast or too slow, talked too much or too little, moved too quickly but not quick enough. We're the blast of the bullet leaving the gun. We're the guilt and the grief of the cop who wished he hadn't shot. We mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. We're the dead. We're the living amid the flicker of vigil candlelight. We're in a dim cell with an inmate reading Dostoevsky. We're his crime, his sentence, his amends, were the mending of ourselves and others, were a Buddhist serving soup at a shelter alongside a stockbroker, were each other's shelter and hope, a widow's 50 cents in a collection plate and a golfer's $10,000 pledge for a cure. We hold these truths to be self-evident. We're the cure for hatred caused by despair. We're the good morning of a bus driver who remembers our name, the tattooed man who gives up his seat on the subway. We're every door held open with a smile when we look into each other's eyes the way we behold the moon. We're the moon. We're the promise of one people, one breath declaring to one another, I see you, I need you, I am you. Will you join me now in a spirit of prayer and meditation? You may choose to close the petals of your eyelids over your eyes, and settle yourself into the pew a little bit more gently, more calmly, as we lift up in prayer these joys and these sorrows expressed aloud here in this community, but also those that have not been spoken today. We know that joy and sorrow are woven finely in our lives, that our lives are connected with those near and far around the world. We especially lift up our prayers for justice to be done and freedom to be restored to those immigrants who have been detained at our borders and elsewhere, detained in conditions that are unspeakably inhumane. We know the humanity of these people, children, adults, mothers, fathers, grandparents, cousins, aunts and uncles, nieces and nephews. Like us, they are part of the human family and do not deserve to be treated in this way. May we also ask, petition, that those who are in positions of responsibility find a light that shines into their hearts and opens them up to the horrors that they are creating. We know that there are many places in the world where such anguish and pain exist. We know that there are places in our world that are rocked by natural disasters, such as Southern California, where people will need help rebuilding their lives, rebuilding their homes, and their communities. We pray also for those who have such needs. We ask you, Spirit of Life, to hold all of this with us and among us, that energetically we might create a fairer, better, more beautiful world for all who inhabit it. Amen. Blessed be. Namaste. Our hymn is number 113. In the gray hymnal, Where is Our Holy Church? Would you rise in body or spirit to sing together? And now if you choose to take the hands of those nearby, if they are willing, we will extinguish our chalice with these words. We extinguish this chalice, for the worship has ended. Our service begins.